Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day on the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Noriko Okubo, who is the co-owner and chief operating officer of Ginza Nishikawa, USA. Ginza Nishikawa opened in 2018 in Ginza, one of the poshest areas in Tokyo, to sell high-quality shokupan bread. And shokupan is also called milk bread and is gaining popularity worldwide for its distinctively soft and fluffy texture with a pleasantly sweet taste. And Ginza Nishikawa's shokupan bread earned accolades very quickly, and now it operates over 130 shops throughout Japan. And the huge success spread to the U.S., and the bakery opened its first overseas location in L.A. in July 2022, which Noriko co-owns and manages. So today we'll discuss what shokupan is, why shokupan has become so popular in Japan and increasingly overseas, the secrets of Ginza Nishikawa's shokupan that sells out within a few hours it is baked in L.A., and much, much more. But before you start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And I have a quick announcement. I am thrilled to let you know that Japan Eats has been nominated for Viewer's Choice for Best Food or Drink Podcast, Viewer's Choice for Best City or Regional Program, and Viewer's Choice for Best Single Topic Series at the 14th Annual Taste Awards. So what is Taste Awards? The Taste Awards is often considered the Oscars of food, and I'm honored to be among the critical nominees and immensely grateful to you, our listeners. And I am asking for your help. So please take a moment to vote for Japan Eats in these three Viewer's Choice categories. Again, it's Best Food or Drink Podcast, Best City or Regional Program, and Best Single Topic Series. And every vote counts, and you can cast your vote until February 17th. And in order to vote, please go to thetasteawards.com, just one word, thetasteawards.com, and click on the red box, submit your Viewer's Choice votes. And thank you so much for your support. And again, thank you for listening to Japan Eats. Now, let's start a conversation with Noriko Okubo. So, hello, Noriko. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Akiko-san. Thank you for having me.
So, I'm very excited. So, now, today you are in LA, and you must be jet lagged because you just flew in to join us.
But I'm very, very genki. I'm very, I have a lot of energy right now, but probably in a couple of hours, I will crash.
That's okay. You can have a cup of coffee with amazing bread. So that's all. Okay. So to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Wow. So I was actually born in Tokyo. And when I was three, my father's business took us pretty much all over the world, but mostly North America and Europe. So, yeah, basically grew up in the quote unquote Western world. But at home, we always ate Japanese. So pretty much rice, miso soup, fish, natto, very, very Japanese. And I would have to bring lunch from home, which was onigiri and with seaweed, and kids at school would make fun of me, which I hear doesn't really happen anymore these days, right? It's kind of a cool thing to bring a Japanese home packed lunch, but that's what I grew up with.
Right. Oh, that's very cool. And I admire your parents try to maintain the Japanese diet. And I think it's important for cultural education for little kids, right?
Yeah, I guess I don't think they really had a choice. They didn't. My mom didn't really know how to cook anything else other than Japanese. So they like to boast that it was probably for my education. But I do think that they didn't have a choice in the matter.
Okay. And now you are a co-owner and chief operating officer of Ginza Nishikawa, USA. And so how did you get involved in the business?
So my business partner, Hiroko Fujikawa, who owns a business here in the beauty industry, she and I were talking. We'd always dreamt of bringing some sort of food item to the U.S. And it happens to be that her mother had developed a strong liking for Ginza Nishikawa bread and had suggested that, you know, we try it. I tried it immediately and fell in love with it. And because I had grown up in the U.S. and I knew what white bread was like over here, it was nothing like that. I saw a business opportunity. I thought I would love to bring this to this market. And that's sort of how it all began.
Interesting. So your partner's mother, so she was an inspiration. That's interesting.
And, you know, at the time, and you mentioned in the introduction that this was, I would say, like early mid 2019. So soon after Ginza Nishikawa opened in 2018, and we kind of saw a slow boom in this idea of kokyu shokupan, which is, I guess, literally means expensive or luxurious bread. And, you know, this was something kind of like a phenomenon, a cultural phenomenon. And I myself was really surprised at the quality of the bread, the price of the bread, but also that, you know, consumers seem to be really embracing it in Japan. And you're also very familiar with the fact that bread, the quality of bread in Japan is generally very high. You know, I think a lot of French people would attest that some of the best baguettes come out of Tokyo as well. So I think, in terms of bringing bread over here, I didn't think it would be too difficult just because the level of the technique and the level of baking is at a very premium level in Japan to begin with.
Yeah, 100%. Because when we think of going to Japan, like from the States or outside of Japan, we think of Japanese cuisine and very like kaiseki or sushi. But once you get to, you know, anywhere in the city, like from convenience stores to like the really Western style bakeries, they have developed something very, very Western, but very uniquely Japanese. So yeah, that's one thing that I think everybody who visits Japan should discover. And I totally agree what you're saying. So we're going to get into that, you know, the boom of kokyu shokupan, that's the expensive bread in a moment. But let's talk about the definition of this Japanese bread called the shokupan. What is shokupan?
I mean, it's, you know, some people call it milk bread here. They call it pan de mie. They call it white sliced bread, wonder bread. It really is literally shoku means to eat, right? And pan is bread. So, But it is the most available, probably the most consumed type of bread that Japanese people eat at home. Traditionally toasted with butter, melted butter on top. But yeah, that's what I would call shokupan. And I purposefully decided not to call this milk bread when I was promoting it here. I do insist on people calling it shokupan and hope that it becomes like another word like umami or karaoke that, you know, Westerners have embraced as a concept, although it's in Japanese.
Right. I don't think you can translate even unless you eat it.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's something like you can't, like, what is lemon? Lemon is lemon. As original as Japanese shokupan, it's just something else. And yeah, when you just get exposed to something like very European style crunchy bread or Wonder Bread, it's just different. It's the completely different, you know,
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people, especially on the West Coast, I think, initially said, well, you know, if it's white bread, it's not going to be, it doesn't feel healthy. It, you know, it has a very bad reputation here in the United States. So a lot of people did tell me initially that it might not work. But we're doing okay right now.
Yeah, it's far beyond okay. Well, we're going to dig into what you actually bring here in the States. But I think, you know, if our visitors to Japan go to Japanese style coffee shop, that's another unique concept of Japanese kisaten. One of the popular menu items, that's the fluffy shokupan toasted and the butter, and it's heavenly. So it's not just eaten like every day, you know, morning breakfast item. It's a part of the culture too.
It really is. And, you know, I mentioned that I grew up eating rice and miso soup, especially for breakfast. But more and more Japanese are eating bread for breakfast. I think if you look it up, sometime in 2010, 2011, the amount of consumption of bread overtook rice in the household, the annual, you know, consumption at home. So that just shows you how Japanese people love their bread, you know? So it's really, it's a competitive market for sure. And Akiko-san, if you come back to Japan, you will see a lot of these kokyu shokupan, you know, stores that specialize in shokupan only. And it's a very saturated market now, I must say, in the last 2-3 years, especially with the pandemic going on and people eating at home a lot.
Right. Well, and I'm sure the quality are very high. So each place post some kind of special ingredients or style of baking or something. So, yes. Yeah, so I think our listeners can now more widely travel to Japan. I hope, you know, listeners, you can discover Japanese shokupan in one of those popular places. So, yeah, so what is the difference exactly between shokupan and other types of bread, like Wonder Bread?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, obviously I'm not a expert in bread, so it's hard for me to get too technical about it. But I can tell you that with our bread, it's really all in the water, we like to say. And we used alkaline ionized water. Perhaps in your, you know, in your work as well, you've heard of very high-end kaiseki chefs who use alkaline water in their cooking, just because it's known to really bring out the flavor of food, and this was what was really important for Ginza Nishikawa, to use the water to bring out the taste of the umami, if you will, the flavor of the bread to the fullest. This is something that other companies have not done. Traditionally, alkaline water has been known to not be good in terms of activating the yeast or, you know, making the bread rise. But they have discovered a way to work around that and to make the bread really, really tasty, especially after the second day. The taste really settles in. So often you'll see people who want the bread like right away, right out of fresh out of the oven. But we like to tell people that it's actually better on the second day because the flavor really seeps in.
Interesting. Yeah. Like you said, like kaisek cuisine or soba noodles or Japanese sake, they tend to use ionized alkaline water because it just brings out the kind of flavor more deeply out of the ingredients. So yeah, that's amazing. And also I think the characteristics is like extremely pillowy fluffiness, and also I think slight sweetness, right? That's very Japanese shokkan.
Yes. I think that's if anything that the consumer will notice straight off the bat, you know, how it's different from a Wonder Bread is definitely the sweetness and the fluffiness. And even though it's fluffy, it feels like there is a lot of depth there. First day, it's fluffy. Second day, like I said, the taste really seeps through and gets deeper. And the third day, we recommend you toast it and enjoy the crispiness on the outside, but the inside becomes really what we call mochi mochi. You know, I don't know how to say that in English. You must know. But yeah, like mochi. I think people are quite familiar with mochi, right? So it's a little bit dense. It's kind of sticky, chewy, maybe is as close as I can get to sort of explaining what the mochi mochi feels like in the mouth. But
right. Yeah, it's like a more bouncy. It doesn't stick to your teeth, but it's kind of bouncy, kind of. Yeah, it's that, but you have to eat it to actually feel it.
Exactly. It's very helpful.
You gotta eat it. Okay, and let's go back to the, you know, that shokpan boom, the high, like a premium shokpan boom. So shokpan used to be reasonably priced everyday food in Japan, but some shokpan became fancier and fancier in recent years. And the regular supermarket shokpan is available at around $2 or so, but those fancy shokpans can be around 10 and upwards. So could you tell us when and why the trends of fancy shokpan started?
Yeah, I think as far as I know, in about 10 years ago, 2013, maybe 7-Eleven, one of the biggest convenience stores, came out with a loaf that was double the price of what was normal shokpan loaf, and that really, I think, instigated a trend to come up with a better version, a more luxurious version, a more expensive version of shokpan. And you know, at the end of the day, it's bread, so even if it's double the price, you do feel like it's a little bit of luxury that you experience at home. So I think that's what sort of kicked things into gear. And then we saw companies like a company called Nogami, a company called Center, the bakery. They came out with loaves that were anywhere from 800-900 yen to 1,000 yen. Which was a big, you know, surprise to consumers, but it was good in that, like I said, it felt like a luxury at home. But as you know, Japan has a very big gift giving culture, and people saw this as a cheaper way to give something really nice to someone because it comes in a really nice, beautiful bag. And if you were to visit someone's home, instead of bringing flowers or cookies or chocolates, which are quite, you know, have become the norm, bringing bread is a very functional, reasonable gift that is welcomed. And I think that really spurred the growth of this sector.
That's a great point. So Japan is such a gift culture. And I think if you go to Japanese supermarket, the department stores, famous Depachika basement, I would say, I don't know, maybe 50% of items are produced or sold for souvenirs. So
yes.
Yeah, beautiful packaging. And you feel like
buying to yourself as a little luxury, you know, present to yourself, or of course you think of other people to bring it. Even if you didn't have any plan, you end up buying something.
You buy for yourself, like you said, or for your friends. And we do find a lot of customers who buy more than one loaf, you know, sometimes 5 to 10 loaves, because they just want to pass it out to all of their neighbors and friends. And yeah, and it's a more affordable gift than buying a box of chocolates, which could be double or triple that price.
Mm, right. And also the gift to yourself, Japanese people call it プチ贅沢, like mini luxury. So yeah, you don't have to travel or go somewhere else, but you can just gift yourself without dining out expensive dishes. You can have nice, relaxing, fancy breakfast by yourself. So yeah, that's a really great concept. And I wonder, you know, why bread became so popular. Now I understand shokupan is perfect.
And I think the interesting thing is that we only deal with one type of bread. You know, we don't have a variety of different types of bread like a traditional bakery would have. It's just this one loaf. And, you know, the idea is that you do, and craftsmanship in Japan is also along the same lines. It's like you make one product, but you do it really, really well.
Mm, right. Well, that's the kind of like Japanese specialized mindset, right? If you go to sushi restaurant, they only do sushi. And if you go to tempura restaurant, they only serve tempuras, kind of a specialization.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Right, and in pursuit of perfection, that's what I would call it.
Very Japanese.
Right. Okay, so we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into the secrets of Ginza Nishikawa's shokupan, which sells out within a few hours after it's baked. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Noriko Okubo, who is the co-owner and chief operating officer of the Ginza Nishikawa USA, the super popular Japanese shokupan bread company. So what is the history of Ginza Nishikawa, and who is the founder?
Yeah, so back in 2018, September 13th, that was when the first store in Ginza opened. And they actually sold out 1,000 loaves in an hour and a half. So there was a big line. I think people were lined up from 4 a.m., although it was an 11 a.m. opening. Yeah, and the goal was to open 100 stores in 3 years, and they achieved that within 2 years and 7 months. So just extreme growth, extreme popularity. The owner is a gentleman by the name of Hitoshi Takahashi, and he has a very vast, a long background in the food industry. He owns another chain bakery in Mie Prefecture. And yeah, it was his sort of brainchild, I guess I would say. And the success, I would say, of Ginza Nishikawa is its branding. Ginza, it has a very, the name Ginza, because of the name of the location, has a very high class feel to it. Being situated in Ginza also feels like they have a very long tradition, when in fact they only opened in 2018. right? And so it, and kind of the overall look and feel of our brand as well is very Japanese, neo-Japanese, I would say. So I think that also has something to do with the success of the brand.
Right. Well, and the listeners who've never been to Ginza, Ginza, actually, that's my favorite place, and my parents used to date in Ginza too. So it's really, now especially, it's a mixture of modern, the most, high brand buildings, and as well as, like, you know, there's the 100-year-old old restaurant around the corner. It's just such a beautiful, balanced area. It's just a specific ambience, and then on the weekends there's no car, so that you can appreciate the whole history and newness and the tradition. So another bread company is Kimuraya. That's the kind of OG of Japanese bread, anpan, like the red azuki bean stuffed bread, which became part of the Japanese food culture too. So that's there. And then, now it's Ginza Nishikawa. So it's such a beautiful food town as well.
I think, just being, just having that Ginza name and being located there, the original store, it's still there. And, a lot of bread is made there. It gives a feeling of being a shinise, kind of like the traditional historic, legendary store, when in fact it really isn't. It's quite new, and it's bread, so it's not a traditionally Japanese type of food group. But
But I think I was looking at your website, Japanese website. It looks very authentic, so it's not just a very kind of ostentatious thing. It's actually, you preserve the tradition, the mindset of focus on one thing and the ultimate quality of it. So, I really, really congratulate on the success of Ginza Nishikawa. So you mentioned why Ginza Nishikawa's bread is so special. That's that, the ionized alkaline water used to really elevate the depths of the taste of the bread. And also, I think you have ingredients that's really well selected, like honey and cream and butter. So maybe you want to talk about that.
Yeah, we actually source all the dairy, everything pretty much here locally. But what really makes it special is the flour, I think. So you could probably, utilize the same ingredients and using flour here, but it would probably not be the same. We import all of our flour that's milled in Japan. Apparently, the milling technique is quite different from what's done over here. And this is why we insist that we import the flour. Some of the flour is sourced from Japan, but most of it is actually Canadian flour, which is what I know is that in the industry, it has a very high high reputation. So I think that's what really makes the difference. It is in the flour, it is in the water. That's what makes it different and special.
And I would imagine the flour is really milled very finely than here, because that kind of silky texture has to be coming out of that fine milling. So
exactly. And I think people here are not that concerned about the fineness of the flour, which is why we can't seem to find source of flour over here.
Right. And your bread is preservative free as well, I heard.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Awesome. Okay. So in 2022, Ginza Nishikawa's first overseas outlet opened in LA, which you are in charge of. So what is the concept of the LA shop? Is this the same as the shops in Japan?
So what happened was, because we were looking for a location in 2019, we had found a location in an area called Silver Lake here, and we were slated to open that year in 2020. Then the pandemic started. I couldn't even come here anymore. It just became clearer and clearer that it was going to be very tricky to start a business here during the pandemic. And we put our plans on hold. But then we also realized that people were getting things delivered more at home, or people were doing pickups. And so we sort of shifted our mindset into finding a location where there wouldn't necessarily be a storefront for us like in Japan, but somewhere where we could actually make the bread and have people taste it and buy it without the in-store experience. And so we found a kitchen like that. A ghost kitchen is what I guess people refer to it. So when you come to LA, there won't be a storefront, but there will be a location where you can come up and you can do a pickup, or you can do order in advance. Eventually, I would like to have a full-on flagship store. But for now, just because I'm noticing that it obviously less costly to just do this as a kitchen rather than a full store concept, I think we want to continue this route for a while before we actually come up with a store. Because really, with one item that we're selling, there really isn't a huge in-store experience, and people would rather just, you know, have it delivered or just pick it up and go. So I think it's going to, we're going to see how things go with the way that we have it structured, but always open to eventually opening a flagship.
Right. Well, I think unexpectedly you have a very strategic solid opening. So that's great. And but I heard that your bread sells out very quickly. So, and you have only one type, but it's just a beautiful. I'm looking at now your website in LA. It's just beautiful. Is how much is a loaf now, right now, per loaf?
So it's $18 per loaf.
Okay. Not bad, because I know other types of bread that could be equally for the high quality and no preservative. So, and then who buys your bread? Do you have any customer demographics?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of, for now, definitely the foodies, you know, the people who have actually traveled to Asia, traveled to Japan, you know, had katsu sandos or steak sandos, who are familiar with the quality of bread. We find are our main customers. Obviously, the Japanese community, the Asian community here also love it. But I think because Japanese food itself has such a good reputation now, I think we really wanted to push that Japanese angle, you know, and exploit that and say, this is Japanese bread. And we found that a lot of people are just so intrigued at that, because they don't associate, most people who haven't traveled to Japan don't associate Japanese food with Japanese bread, right? It's usually sushi, it's tempura, it's usually sushi in California. So I think that sort of disconnect, that it's kind of a surprise for people still. So we need to do a lot more PR to get into the minds of people who don't necessarily have that exposure. But yeah, the demographic is definitely the Asian community here and the foodies.
Right. Do you know how they eat your bread? It's like, as you suggest, as without toasting, day one and day two, and also day three, they toast. Or what's their, if you have any idea?
Akiko-san, when I send you a loaf, you will note that in the box or in the bag, we've created a little postcard that gives you directions to how to eat the bread. And I find it quite ridiculous that, you know, I have to write directions to eat the bread, but people are quite loyal about it. And they do follow the fact that we recommend you sort of rip through the bread first and just stuff it in your face to enjoy the fluffiness and the texture, you know, and then day two or day three, really just slicing it up and toasting it and making your favorite open face sandwich or French toast or grilled cheese sandwich. I mean, there's just a myriad of ways to eat bread, right? And in Japan, our promotional message is actually bread is like rice, so it goes with everything. So we promote kimpira gobo, kimpira, to sandwich that between the loaf, the bread slices as well.
Interesting.
One of the fun things about promoting this bread is the ways that people come up with on how to consume it. Mm. And if you go to our Instagram page, we do have a lot of ideas for people.
Okay, right. But I think everybody should just put their nose in the bread first and just really enjoy the smell and the texture, exactly. Right? Thank you. I can't wait to taste that. So I look forward to it. So, speaking of, how many loaves of shokan do you produce in LA right now? And because I just heard you started to deliver nationwide. So there are two things, right? You can order, but you can go purchase without ordering, right? So how many do you have available for someone who just go get at your store?
We are currently running at around 250 to 400 loaves a day, but we want to increase that production. I would say on average about 250 loaves a day.
And sounds very competitive. Yeah.
So it does go fast, but we are trying to keep up with the demand. But we do have we do have to put caps on the online ordering and the walk-ins as well.
Right. And also you just started actually the Goldberry delivery service.
Yes.
Right. How can we order?
So folks in New York, in your neck of the woods, can go to Goldbelly online and search for Ginza Nishikawa, and you will be able to order for overnight delivery.
Oh, wow.
And like I said before, we do recommend the second day. So it kind of arrives in the best sort of timing for you. It won't be fresh out of the oven for sure. But we're quite confident that people can really enjoy the bread, the next day when it arrives.
Mm, it's like a chocolate brownie tastes better on the second day. It's the same
exactly.
Idea.
Or curry rice, right?
Right.
Curry rice. It's better on the second day.
Right. Well, I think in terms of curry rice, we just keep cooking. And I think day seven is the best, somebody told me.
So, really? Day seven. I have to remember that.
So that person intentionally make really, really curry in a big pot. And then, you know, do we keep it heating? You're heating and then it gets the best. And he's a chef, so I believe it.
Yeah. Right. No. That makes sense. You just have to make it way in advance if you're going to have guests on a certain day.
Right. So, and also, so you have, you organize pop-up events too, right? So what kind of events are they?
I mean, when we say events, it's not necessarily anything, you know, we don't have entertainment or things like this, but we found, especially in California, that because it's so spread out, everything is so far off, and people in Santa Monica don't want to go, you know, 10, 12 miles up to Hollywood or downtown LA. So it's just really spread out. So we found partners that will sell our bread for, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, and just make it available for people in those areas to buy fresh. So right now we are running a pop-up in Costa Mesa, which is in Orange County, which is about like 2 hours from here. And we have one in Glendale or Torrance, and we're looking into Pasadena. We'll have one in West Hollywood soon. So we're just trying to make it easier for people because especially in LA, people don't like to drive long distances because of the traffic. The traffic is so bad here. So we're trying to make it easier for people who don't necessarily live two or three miles away from us.
That's the famous LA situation. So
right?
Right. Okay. So you sounds like you've been really creating the fan base. So so what are your plans and dreams in 2023 and beyond?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to open up in the areas that I just mentioned, because we do feel like, especially when we do the pop-ups, they definitely sell out in minutes. And so we do find that there could be a demand for us in those locations. I'd like to open on the East Coast as well as in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, just areas where I believe there is kind of a very high culinary interest in Japanese things, and a dense Asian population or a population that appreciates Asian food. That's the goal. Mm. We might not make it 130 stores in 3 years, but definitely want to grow for sure.
Mm, well, I could see a lot of New Yorkers just go crazy about this kind of bread, right? And they like queuing up too for something very special and delicious. So, right, that would work. Okay, so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
So if you go to Ginza Nishikawa USA, that's our U.S. Instagram. We have a Facebook page as well with the same. If you search Ginza Nishikawa USA, that'll come up. Those Instagram is probably the best. We've just started a TikTok channel as well. But I do recommend for people, if they want to know about the pop-ups, the newest, you would definitely go to Instagram. And of course, we have our homepage as well, which is also ginzanishikawausa.com.
Mm, awesome. Great. So, well, sounds like it's going to be a busy year for you. So good luck.
Thank you so much, Akiko-san.
All right. So thank you for joining us today, Noriko, and please keep me posted. Maybe you can join us again.
I will. Thank you.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japaneseatheritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.